What's up, everybody, and welcome to the Occupation Nation podcast. This is season one, episode 10. I'm your host, Zach Horvath, and I also have a special guest co-host with me by the name of Rick Lynch, and he has some amazing questions. I hope you guys really enjoy, and I had so much fun having Rick on the show with me. And today on the show, we are talking to paranormal investigator Ronnie Headley. Now, we get into some really cool conversations about what is paranormal investigating compared to ghost hunting? What are some of the things he's encountered? What does he go through? What are some of the equipment he uses? Does it affect his idea of religion? Now, this is all just a little teaser about what we talk about, so be sure to listen all the way through and check all that out. We'd like to thank our Patreon supporters, Julie and Austin. Thank you so much for supporting the show. And we'd also like to thank today's sponsor, which is Sunny Scent Scoopable Wax. Sunny Scents is an amazing scoopable wax that you can use to make your house smell incredible, and your guests will just be like, man, what's that smell? It smells so good. Well, it's going to be Sunny Scents. She's got Fruit Loops, Skittles, Blue Cedar Lavender, Lavender Marshmallow, all kinds of different flavors. So head over to Etsy.com/shop/Sunny Scents Wax to get you some today, and be sure to use the code ONATION10. That's ONATION10 and get you a little bit of a discount. So get your house smelling good. Now let's get into this interview.
I'm Ronnie Headley. I am founder and lead investigator for Tennessee Paranormal.
When did this idea spark in your head? Have you always wanted to do something like this?
I've always been what I call intuitive. Had feelings about things. A lot of today they call it psychic, empath, and things like that. I don't consider myself that. I don't feel it. I just get a gut feeling on something and just kind of go with it. So actually back in the 80s I had an experience, and that just piqued my interest in it. And back then it was kind of taboo to kind of deal in that kind of thing, so you kind of kept it to yourself. And every once in a while you'd run across some like-minded people and get together and do ghost hunting back then. That's what, you know. So today we consider ourselves professional paranormal investigators. You know, you still have groups that get together, friends and stuff, and go out ghost hunting. But to be a professional, just over the years, we've come together and developed the team. To develop the team, go out, do some tours with some professionals, learn different techniques, because every team is different. So you learn the techniques and things as you go along. After I formed Tennessee Paranormal, I actually decided to take some classes and everything. And there's very few classes that you can find here in the U.S. Most of them are overseas, and got the degrees and things there.
Sweet. So how long have you been doing this type of work?
About 35 years.
Wow. So you've probably seen some stuff, heard some stuff.
Oh, yeah.
What are some of the things that you got certified in? So what are some of those further education courses?
I have a diploma in ghost hunting and paranormal investigation. I have a diploma in ghost hunting and event planning and management. A diploma in modern demonology for paranormal investigators, because that's another door that if you don't know what you're dealing with, you need to stay out of it. So it's best to get some experience in that field too.
It sounds like that would be something you'd need to know about.
And then I'm also a Reiki master. So I also took a house cleansing and Reiki practitioner course.
Okay. So let's start with the first one. So your diploma in ghost hunting and paranormal investigation. What are the things you have to do to get that diploma? Do you just like go on? Is it like an online course you can go through? Or
it is an online course that you can go through. And depending on what course you take, the price varies and the hours vary. You can have anywhere between 4 credit hours up to 80 credit hours on a lot of the courses. And it's just learning the basics of the equipment, the different various types of equipment out there, the different types of hauntings. There are several of those. And locations, that type of thing.
Okay. What are some of the examples of different types of hauntings?
We classify it as two different types of hauntings. There's residual haunting, where Actually, the spirit doesn't know it's dead. It just goes about its regular, everyday things, ignoring you. You know, you might see it pass through walls or doors because originally, you know, that might not have been when it existed. That foundation of a building or wall or door may not have been there, but it just kind of passes through and goes on. And then you have intelligence where they communicate with you, be it through EVPs and answering questions or moving objects. And
so what do you see the most of? Do you see more residual or more intelligent?
We conduct actual public investigations where the public can come out and investigate with us. And most of it is intelligent because we ask questions and we get EVPs, which is electronic voice phenomenon, and we get those where we can't hear it with the naked ear a lot of times, you know, but you play back on the recordings and you get the answers in there. And also objects moving, you can leave trigger objects out, and they will act like if you're looking at a child, maybe a doll or a ball or a bear or something like that, and it will actually move it, things like that.
That sounds really awesome and scary at the same time. What is a Reiki? Is that what you said?
Reiki?
Yeah, Reiki. What is that? I've never heard that
it's
before.
It's all energy. Everything is connected by energy.
Okay.
And it's just learning the different types of energy and how to place it for healings or movements and things.
Okay, cool. Have you run into anything like following you are those some of the precautions you take to make sure that stuff doesn't happen?
We take precautions to keep that away.
Yeah, so. I figured you'd have to. Let's talk about Tennessee Paranormal in specifics here. So how many's on your team?
Originally, there were three of us. We just put five more people on the team, so there's a total of eight of us now.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And we do a public investigation, a ghost walk, and a public investigation at Henry Horton State Park. And then we also do private investigations at homes and everything. If someone thinks they've got a haunting or something, I'll do an initial interview with them, and then one of our team members, he does a secondary investigation with them, and then we compare notes without talking to each other to see if we come up with the same kind of ideas, and then we try to go forward from there of scheduling a time to actually go out and do the investigation. Thing about it is, you know, you've got a lot of teams out there today, and there's a lot of them in this area since the television shows and reality TV has come to be, that you have teams pop up everywhere. We try to be different in the way that we do it. We approach everything from a scientific standpoint of trying to disprove before we prove.
I like that.
So, you know, one of the gentlemen that is on our team, he is actually a firefighter and an arson investigator. So he deals with the scientific stuff daily. And so he's kind of our skeptic that goes in and tries to disprove everything that we can get.
It's smart that you guys have someone like that.
A lot of people will go through and they watch the reality TV, and I'm not saying reality TV is faked or anything, but a lot of it is, you know, you got to face it, guys, we're dealing with ratings. So, you know, I tend to see a lot with the people, you know, that come in and, oh, I've been touched and I've been this and I've been that, you know, and yes, it does happen. But someone constantly coming through and everywhere they go being touched or scared or you know, I can't breathe kind of thing. It just kind of...
I think some people are just looking for attention.
Yes.
Yeah. I was going to ask you about what you felt about the reality TV stuff. Because, I mean, if we're being honest, that's where I first saw this stuff. And then in my own head, I was like, man, this is either super intense 100% of the time or... What's the line there? How much of it do you think is like the real stuff, and then some of it's just TV?
A lot of it is. I mean, the stories and the history and things like mm-hmm. that. Like on our team, we have a historian, you know, somebody that I really like to help do the research and everything. So we don't just go out and say, okay, this is happening here and everything else. Well, we'll go in and David will go in and pull in like the if there's been any deaths occurred in the house and things like that. A couple of others on the team will go through and help me. I'll go through the historians. We'll go through archives and things like that and try to get the historical piece of the property. Just because the house is there now doesn't mean that's what's always been there and what's always happened. So we try to go in and get the true history of the area and what
that
possibly
has to be
happen.
Hard sometimes. I mean, I bet you run into some roadblocks there and some hurdles that you have to get past.
Oh, it does, you know, and thankfully, you know, we have historical societies and stuff around now and archives that a lot of times we can go in and talk to the historians there and they can help us. Like when we started with the park and everything, before we ever did a tour or an investigation or anything, I went down and sat down with the lady that is head of the Historical Society in Marshall County and got a lot of information about the park of what actually happened there before. Hmm. And
so let's go into that. Tell me about what you guys do at the park. I want to hear about that.
Okay. It all started with one of the rangers contacted me and said that, you know, I understand you guys got a paranormal investigation team. Can you come out and tell me if me and my rangers are crazy or if we've actually got something happening here? And I'm like, okay, what's going on? He says, well, our rangers have gone into the rooms in the hotel and everything with their guns drawn and everything searching for people because we hear people talking, arguing, door slamming, and there's nobody on that floor that, you know, it's not rented. And we've actually had the switchboard light up sometimes. And had it checked, and everything's fine. The phone system's working great. So we went in. I did some research on the property and everything and got some information. And later found out, talking to some other people around there about the restaurant, one of the employees of the restaurant had actually seen Governor Horton walking through the restaurant, the apparition of him. They'd seen an apparition of a woman walking through. One of the park rangers was coming through on rounds one night, and she saw a woman standing on one of the cabin porches, and she radioed in and said, you know, are we having a Wren Fest or some type of festival this weekend? And they said, no. And she said, well, there's a lady on this cabin here. And she said, they told her, said, well, that's all men in there. So she turned to go back to check it out, and it just vanished. And just all kinds of things like that happening around through there. So we started doing tours. We do a ghost walk where we do it like once a month through May, and you can book online with us or you can come out to the park and book. But we do a ghost walk where we do like a two-hour walk and tell you the history of the park, what the rangers have had that happened there and what we've actually found at those locations. Usually, the more often that we go in and do investigations, the more stuff that we get. And the reason being is just like if I come into your home and meet you, you know, you're not going to open up to me and tell me a whole lot. I'm not going to open up to you and tell you a whole lot if we just met and everything. But basically, once you get to know me, you know, we're going to start sharing more and more information. And it's the same thing with them. When you're getting an intelligent haunting, it's like...
They become familiar with you.
Yes, they become familiar with you.
Wow.
I had one location that I went to that... actually, I always go in and, you know, we treat them with respect. You see a lot of people on TV and stuff challenge. I don't believe in challenging. You know, you're in their home, treat them with respect. That's their house. And so I went in and told them good evening and everything. And this is Ronnie. I'm here with some friends tonight, and we've come to talk to you. Hope you come out and talk to us. And if you've asked me any questions, I apologize. I'm not being rude. I can't hear you because, you know, until I play my recorder back, and if you've asked me a question, I'll come back and ask you later and give you the answer. And so I'm leading people up the stairs. We're lights out, so, you know, I'm leading them up a landing and everything. And this lady asked me a question, and I answered her question. And when I played back the recorder, I hear an EVP that says, "Hi, Ronnie."
Wow.
And so the next time I couldn't make it, and one of my teammates captured, "Where's Ronnie?" And then the next time that I was able to go, they said, "Well, you asked about Ronnie last time. He's here tonight, and we captured, I see him." So, like I said, you know, you have the residual that doesn't know what's going on, just pass through, and then you have intelligent like that. I've seen objects move across floors, things like that.
Wow.
Wow. You're getting on a name basis here. I like that. That's cool.
A lot of times we have the meters and stuff that was set up, and we'll ask them questions. And, you know, the meter's got a red light and a green light. And you'll say, okay, you know, I'm fixed to ask you some questions. They're going to be yes and no questions. Can you light up the green light for yes and the red light for no? And then you ask questions that you know the answers to that particular person that you're trying to talk to. And then you'll start getting intelligent answers, yes or no. So
wow.
I do that a lot with Governor Horton. and get a lot of correct answers and responses from that.
That's cool. If I was there and you started like answering these questions, I knew the answers to, I'd be like, all right, here we go.
Oh yeah, we have a great time. I mean, you know, and the thing is, we do the ghost walks, and we charge $20 for a 2-hour ghost walk, and that starts at 5 and goes to 7. Or we do a $65 tour where you go on the ghost walk, but after everybody leaves the ghost walk, we break out all the technology that we have, and we place it around to different locations we've taken to, and we investigate with you to 3 a.m. every location.
Nice.
You're getting a legit full investigation at that point.
Yes, sir.
That's awesome. That's cool. What is your favorite part of it?
I love what I do, and I love interacting. And to me, it's, you know, it's trying to scientifically prove something that's not there is actually there. And so I like that aspect of it. But my most favorite part is taking somebody that's skeptical and a non-believer and watching their reaction at the end of the night when they become a believer.
Yeah. So what would you say if there is a skeptic, if someone comes to you and they're like, yeah, this ain't real or whatever, what's your response to them? Like, how do you deal with skeptics like that?
Just tell them to come in with an open mind and join us on one of our tours sometime, you know, and go through and mm-hmm. see for themselves.
Yeah. You know? I mean, that seems like the fair answer, right? I mean, if you're going to be a skeptic and you go through this tour and you see something or get something and you're still a skeptic, then they're going to be it. It's whatever floats their boat, right?
Oh, absolutely. We had a gentleman came in one time, and, you know, he's like, yeah, I'm only here for my fiance and stuff. And he got touched, and, you know, that kind of made – he was still kind of a little skeptical, but when we went back into one of the cabins we were investigating and everything, we have what we call a Boo Buddy. It's an interactive tool for children. It's a little teddy bear that has meters in it and everything that can sense temperature and touch and movement and that kind of thing. And we came back in, and the – bear was turned around. He's like, that bear moved. And he said, did you move that bear? I said, dude, you came out the cabin behind me. You were the last one out of the cabin. And he said, that's right. So the rest of the night, he was trying to figure out who moved the bear. So he went from a skeptic to now I'm believing because I've actually seen, one, I've been touched, and two, I've seen something that's moved.
Yeah, I could see that change in someone's mind for sure. Does someone call you and say, hey, I think I have a haunted place or something? Is that how it usually starts, or do you actively seek places to go?
We do both. We, like I said, we actively seek places to go, not only for public investigations, but for team and everything to go out to some other investigations to learn from other people's techniques and that kind of thing. But we also do private investigations where people call us and say, hey, I think we've got something going on. We'll set up the interview. We'll do the interviews. Mm-hmm. Then, like I said, you know, it's depending on what kind of problems they're having. It depends on how much research we have to do. We have a website. Plus, you know, we link up with different paranormal societies and stuff. And, you know, they get contacted. Like one of the gentlemen does a paranormal podcast in another state. And a lady called in and talked to him, and she was in Kentucky. So he contacted me and said, would you be willing to go to Kentucky? So,
interesting. So what, speaking of like Kentucky, what is your like radius? What do y'all normally go to?
Tennessee, Kentucky, Mississippi, Alabama, and Georgia.
Okay. So yeah, y'all are pretty
southeast.
Yeah. Southeast.
Yes.
So
yes.
You just go wherever, basically in the southeast.
Absolutely.
When you're out on an investigation, do you have a outline of what you want to do when you get there? Like, is there, okay, we always do this at the beginning of the investigation. We need to get into this. We need to get into this. Take me through that.
One of the first things we'll do is after, you know, we've talked to the person and set up a time and everything, we go in and do what we call a baseline sweep. A baseline sweep is going in to a building with our K2 meters, which measure electromagnetic fields and things like that. And we go through and take a sweep of the house to find what the baseline is. Because most of the time, you know, the scientific approach to it is spirits use electromagnetic energy to speak or move things and things like that. So you get a baseline of what it is. And then if you got a peak in it, then, you know, there's a probability that you've got something there. Being, like I said, with the team members and everything, being more scientific, David will go through and he'll take a program and map out the whole entire house with all the electrical switches and heaters and electrical panels and things like that so that we don't get false positives. So if you've got a meter sitting somewhere and we've got a camera on it and a recorder on it, then we've got three pieces of evidence right there if something happens. We're videoing the meter going off, we're seeing the meter going off, and we're recording the meter actually, the alarms and stuff going off on it. And then us talking about the temperature rose to this, the temperature dropped to this. So you can look at that pieces of evidence and correlate it with the baseline sweep and say, okay, well, we had an electrical panel here that could have caused that. Mm. So like I said, we look at it as scientific to try to disprove before we prove.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir.
So what's a typical investigation look like? What's the time? Do you do it at night and all that?
We do it at night. A lot of times, you know, people say, you know, why do paranormal investigators only go out at night? Well, are the spirits only there at night? No, the spirits are there all the time. But you've got so much noise and background noise and thing, then it's what I call contaminated evidence, because you can't prove that, you know, that wasn't a plane going by that made that rumble, or a vehicle, or somebody talking next door that just bled over into. So nighttime is quieter. Plus, the energies and everything, like I was talking earlier about the energy fields and everything for them, you can relate it back to, like, radio stations at night. You get a stronger signal and a larger range at nighttime than you do at daytime, because the atmosphere and everything, the temperature and conditions of the atmosphere will make the radio links and everything go further. So same thing.
So it correlates to that?
Yes.
Interesting. I never thought about it like that. I always think of at night you do these investigations, but there's more to it than that.
Oh, absolutely.
It's not just doing it at night. There's a lot more that goes into it. So are you, what are some of the equipment you use? I want to hear about all the different things you use in an investigation.
Gosh, we'll be here for hours.
Okay. So let's talk about like your most common.
Basic equipment. If somebody is wanting to get started in the field.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
My suggestion is just a few pieces of equipment. Start out with a K2 meter so that you can make baselines and that kind of thing, and use it for the meters. You know, the stronger it is, the more lights will light up on it. You can ask questions and tell it, you know, light up, you know, if you're here and that kind of thing. A good flashlight, because, you know, you're wandering through the dark and you got hazards and things like that. And my suggestion, you know, you want to keep your hands free, so use a headlamp with a night vision lens on it, so that you're getting the infrared light versus the light that you're blinding everybody and that kind of thing, and running your night vision. And a recorder, a good digital recorder. We use digital recorders just like a recording artist would use on the side and everything, where it's like 4-track recorders. And a good recorder so that you can pick up the EVPs. A notebook to take notes, you know. That would be my basic.
Okay. So would you say that the EVPs are the most common type of thing you deal with? Or is it the K2 meter, watching it move? Or what's the most common thing you see?
We get several. We get the meters going off. We get the K2 going off. We get EVPs. And we get spirit boxes. Spirit boxes are the ones that use a sweep of the
radio. Okay, so I've seen this on Ghost Adventures. I saw that. That thing seems awesome. Do you think it's awesome?
Oh, or? I do.
Because have you seen this thing?
I have not seen
so
that.
Tell them a little bit about it. I don't want to say anything wrong.
A spirit box is, it's been converted and everything. It's an AM/FM radio that's been converted to where it can sweep. And in 1/10 of a second, it'll go through both sides, AM and FM, all the way through and back and forth. And so you've got white noise. You're not.
It's like, it's kind of like that is what it sounds like. But then.
And then words come through. And so what you do is you ask questions, and then you listen for the answer through the spirit box. Because what it's doing, it's pulling that energy of that white noise and the electromagnetic field from it, and it feeds out the answers to it. We have several different types of spirit boxes. And our team went up one time to Brushy Mountain Penitentiary. Nick Groff, that was on TV, he did a public investigation up there. So we did as his team and went up and everything. And I'm of Native American descent. So, you know, they had a Cherokee gentleman that was in there, and I speak a little Cherokee. I don't speak fluent, but enough to get by. And he had his geoport there, and he said, would you come in to the solitaire with me, and let's test this out? So we went in with the geoport, which is like a large spirit box with lights and stuff on it and everything. It has like a robotic voice on it. And I started speaking Cherokee, and it actually spoke some Cherokee back. So he's like, man, I can't believe this. You know, he said, I've never had it speak native language before. So we use geoports. And I was hung on it, like, man, I got to have one of those. And then I found out the cost of it, and I'm like, I don't know if I need it.
Wait a second. I got you.
But wound up found a gentleman in England that would build one for me, like, for half of what I could get it here, so we now have the geoports.
Oh, awesome. What's your favorite equipment to use?
I like the geoport, and then we built SLS cameras, too. If you've seen on TV the ones where it makes it look like stick figures and everything.
Oh, yeah.
So we made those. You take an Xbox Kinect camera and
yeah, and it like that. puts like a like bunch of laser mesh out there,
right?
And then you'll see like this black mass kind of walking through it,
right? You can put it on a person, and you can actually turn the person that, you know, you can see the outline of them, but it turns them into a stick figure,
right?
And so if you got your camera there in a room and there's nobody in it, and all of a sudden you see stick figure walking across the room, you
like,
know,
well,
I just captured something.
Wow.
And then we use different program and everything. We can turn it into just a regular camera. We can use night vision. We can use infrared. And then it also records with the programs that we use. So, like I said, you know, start out with the basics. And then if you find out you like it and get into
it. We're starting to get into the professional side.
Then you can start adding more and more equipment to it. The first apparition I saw was actually working at the funeral
home. Oh, wow.
So, it actually turned out to be the owner's great-grandfather that founded the funeral home in the 1800s.
Wow. That's cool.
So basically, as a paramedic and a funeral director, kind of a fascination with death.
Yes, it's a good business. It's, you know, you have people out there that it's a hobby for, and then when you turn into the professional end of it, then trying to convert it into a business, there's not a whole lot of money to be made into it. A lot of times, all the private investigations that we go on, we don't charge anything to go do an investigation. Due to the fact that we're just out to help someone and get them through, you know, what they think is a crisis and give them a peace of mind of, yes, we've got something, and no, we don't. We tend to try to make our money and everything on the ghost walks and things like that so that that we can, you know.
That feeds into doing your own stuff, the investigations.
And right now, I'm so far in the red.
Oh, wow.
Because, you know, you're buying all the, trying to keep up with the technology and everything, and you know.
Oh, yeah. I could see that.
Some of the spirit boxes, like we were talking about and everything, they go for $4,000.
Oh, wow.
So, you know.
Wow. Yeah. So basically, you're just dumping the money you make back into it.
Yes.
So how long has Tennessee Paranormal been a business? Per se?
Oh, let's see. We just started working with the park and everything about a year and a half ago.
Okay, so I thought it was pretty fresh in terms of the ghost walks and
that end is. Mm-hmm. But I started out, you know, like I said, in the 80s, interested in everything, and a group of friends here and a group of friends there, and then I moved to Tennessee and worked with a couple other groups and everything, and got a group of friends together, and we just started calling it Tennessee Paranormal and that kind of thing. And went with another team and worked with them for a while, and decided when this came out with the park to go ahead and put a team of our own back together in it. So that's what we did.
Cool.
Cool. What are some of the things you do while you're investigating? Like you said, do you ask questions or is someone watching the cameras all the time? What are some of the things you do specifically when you're out there?
Okay, we do have sometimes people watch, you know, like if we're at a home investigating or something like that, we'll put someone at the computer watching. We have like four night vision cameras that's going on a computer screen, and they have motion activity sensors on it. It'll light up, and that'll cue you to that specific screen. And, you know, they'll make a notation of it has a time stamp on it, time so-and-so movement went off. And then we can go back in and review that later. Same thing with, like, if we're asking questions, we do ask questions. And we do what we call live listening. We've got a headset plugged into it. And if we hear something, we can press a button on it and make a mark that says, okay, we go back and review this part and everything. But when we do the investigations, we have, like I said, the four stationary cameras plus the SLS cameras plus each one of us has two or three recorders. So when we do an investigation, it's not like we've got immediate evidence and everything.
Right.
We got hundreds of hours of stuff to review.
So that's a whole other side of it. You have the investigation, but then you got to dig through all this data and all that stuff you get.
Absolutely.
So when you're there actually doing the investigation, do you focus on like places, like rooms specifically, or do you just go room to room? Or
it varies. It depends on like if you know somebody contacts us and says, you know, I've been having this problem in my bedroom, or my kids have had this feeling, you know. Animals are very intuitive. An animal will pick up on something before you will. And if my cat or my dog's been acting strange here and that kind of thing, then that's kind of thing that that we key in on. If it's outside of property, if they've seen shadow figures and things like that, so we kind of
you take what you get from those interviews at the beginning,
and then we focus on this.
You tailor your investigation based on that,
and then also with the baseline sweeps and everything. You know, if you're picking up energies as you're going through, you know, more energy in this area, and there's no reason for it, you know, then you know we're going to concentrate here, and then we go in and, like I said, from the historical aspect, we find previous owners. If there's death in the house, this kind of thing, you know, or suicide, murder, you know, that kind of thing. If it's a business, and We kind of tailor the investigation that, you know, like, our, is there anyone here with us? Can you tell us your name? You know, are you so-and-so? There was a Civil War battle here. Are you a soldier? Are you a doctor or nurse that helped someone?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that kind of thing.
Okay. How long does a normal, like, okay, this person called me, I'm going to do this investigation, to, okay, here's what we found. What's that normal span? Is it like a week? Is it 2 weeks? Is it a month? Or
it usually takes about 3-4 weeks, but by the time you do a complete investigation, because like I told you, you know, we're not going in just charging in. We're going to do the investigation, the initial investigation,
right.
And that's usually within, you know, 48, 72 hours that both of those investigations. Then we're going to compare the notes, and then we're going to go in and do our research. And depending on, you know, what kind of area it is, whether we have to do some travels to get into it, what we can find online and that kind of thing.
Like, how do y'all divvy up going through all this data you have?
Like I said, most of the team members have 2 to 3 recorders.
Mm.
And so what we'll do is we'll sit down and go through our each individual.
So everyone's got their own.
Yes.
Okay.
So everybody sits down and goes through their investigation. And there's different types of programs that you can put out there. My favorite is WavePad Pro. It's a digital editing program and everything. And I can go in and amplify and then listen to it. And then I can cut out the snippet of what I've heard and everything. And then we save that, put a title and track on it where it is. Like when we go in, we'll say, okay, now recording in, say cabin in whatever cabin number, or the hotel and, you know, room number or whatever, and on such and such date. So we've got it in there as to where we're at. And then at the end of the session, I always say ending session here, you know. And then so we go through and we know exactly where we're at and what, you know, when we get the EVP. And then we cut that out and we send it to the other team members and let them listen to it and say, okay, what do you hear, you know. And just kind of a blind thing sometimes on that too of what do you hear. Hmm. And then put it together like that.
Okay.
Even though you're amplifying and cutting out the snippets and everything, the most important thing is to save the original unedited, because if somebody comes in and says, how can you prove that? Then you can go back and you've got the original unedited, so that when they put it through, they're not hearing anything of clicking out and adding into and that kind of thing.
Oh, okay.
So you've got everything right there for them. We're all born with abilities to see and hear things that actually, you know, we come with more of the, like sixth sense type thing. and understand it more as a child. But as we grow older and
we try to push it down.
It's beaten down.
Mm-hmm.
Or you don't really hear that, you know. So I often say, you know, like I had a lot of imaginary friends and when I was a child, or did I? Or was this something that was just guiding me toward the goal that I'm supposed to be at today? But
that's an interesting point. I mean, that could be a whole podcast in itself right there.
But kids have that tendency and everything. An autistic child, you know, an autistic child is highly sensitive to different things, be it food, taste, texture, clothing, you know, that kind of thing. So they could be more aware of their surroundings because they have that sensory. And then, like I said, being a child too, you know, those children have those. And
wow.
So that's a very real thing that could be going
on. Oh, yeah,
on.
Absolutely.
So have you ever been legitimately scared when you're doing an investigation? And
I have never encountered anything that I've really been scared of.
Okay.
I've had some that's been on the borderline. But, you know, back into talking, you know, with the demonology and things like that. If you have got something, you know, a demon will lie to you. I mean, I'm good, I'm this, I'm what you're looking for and everything else. And a lot of times when you study demonology, it'll tell you a lot of times if it appears in a child, it's usually a demon because, you know, they're looking to, because your trust is in a child and the innocence of a child and that kind of thing.
Hmm.
If you show a fear or anything else, and it is that, then it's found your weakness and can play off your weakness.
Gotcha.
In the beginning with me, it was just trying to figure out what was actually there, you know. I call it, you know, like taking a peep through the veil. You know, we all, at some point, we're all going to be on the other side, and it's just trying to figure out what is the other side. And so any kind of knowledge that you have that can help you mm-hmm. to figure that out.
Right.
So how has this affected, or has it affected, your belief in religion or your belief in God, or has it affected that aspect of your life at all?
I'm a religious person. I do believe in God, and I believe in, you know, that there's different realms, and just something, you know. Somebody asked me one time, said, well, why are they here? And my answer is that is what has to be for to make them leave, you know, who says they have to go. If you look at the realms and everything else, you know, and you're talking about the Bible and everything, and it's talking about, you know, when the dead in Christ shall rise, you know, so what do they do before they rise? So, I mean, you know, there's nothing in the Bible that tells you where they are or what they go. And, you know, it talks about, you know, it back again to the Reiki and the things, mm-hmm. everything interconnected with energy, everything's energy. Mm-hmm. So the residual haunting is that energy that we leave behind where we do daily tasks of walking here, going there, working. So that's the one that just does its thing. So it's like a time stamp, you know, it does the same thing every day, same time. Whereas the other is the intelligent that's walking around still that can answer the questions, if that makes sense to you. When you experience something, that's your experience. You're going to believe it or not believe it.
Mm-hmm. It's no longer me saying it to you.
But that's my personal experience with it. I'm telling you what I have experienced. Whether you believe it or not, you know, up to you.
Right.
But once you come out and experience, then it becomes your experience.
Yeah, it becomes your experience. Exactly.
I have experienced this too. So, you know, back when I started this, it was kind of like a taboo kind mm-hmm. of thing, you know, you just didn't talk about it and this kind of thing until you run into like-minded people.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, now you've got people that you can talk to. Okay, you've had this happen too, let's sit and talk.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing with trying to come in and say, you know, you're listening to what I'm saying, but once you've had that experience, you can relate to it. So
has it been nice that you're able to talk about these things and you see more people? Has it been the community is growing and growing and growing? Or has it kind of stalled out? Or,
oh no, it's growing daily. Mm-hmm. You go on Facebook and it's more and more and more and more and more. And we have a, you know, we have a group on Facebook and everything, and we link up with people in the UK and Australia and Switzerland.
Yeah. You know? So has that been a great tool for you to use?
Oh, absolutely.
Do you just bounce ideas off of them, or do you just talk to them about different types of things you've experienced? Or
we keep posts going of, you know, different locations that you can go out as a team and investigate, you know. We might post, you know, we post little jokes and stuff on there all the time just to kind of amuse ourselves. But we also post like evidence and stuff, you know. Okay, this is what I'm seeing. You put it in a group and it's across, you know, in Australia or the UK or something, and they look at it and they give you feedback.
So that's what I was thinking. You know, I would want to use it that way. That way you can you can get it in front of other people who have no idea about anything. And
absolutely.
They just say, yeah, I heard exactly. Mm-hmm. I heard this. And you go, oh, that's exactly what I heard.
Exactly. Or you've got a video or a photo or something, and they're looking at it and say, okay, this is what I think it is.
And then when it matches up with yours, sure. You're just like, oh, baby, here
and,
we go.
And here we go again with the videos and stuff. Mm-hmm. And the paranormal, a lot of times you hear people talking about orbs, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Well, orbs can or cannot be paranormal. You know, a dust particle will show up as an orb.
Mm-hmm.
A bug.
Yeah,
You know, and what you do is we look at it and everything, and, you know, a dust particle is going to float and fall and land somewhere. But if you see an orb going across and everything, going crazy ways and goes through something, you know, what was that? And then you just kind of throw it out there and get other people's opinion on it. You know, is this dust or is this, you know, a mm-hmm. bug, or is this actually something we have captured here?
So speaking about the TV shows, what's your favorite TV show? If you had to pick one to watch, like, hey, go watch this one, which one would you pick?
Gosh. Actually, I have two.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair.
I like the Tennessee Wraith Chasers.
Okay.
And I also like Kindred Spirits.
Okay.
And next Thursday, I'll actually be on one of their episodes. I can't tell you until after it airs.
Oh, okay.
Kindred Spirits.
So that's a little teaser there. Okay. Yeah, so when this comes out, you'll already be on. You've been on it.
Yes.
That's cool.
We filmed in November.
Okay.
And it's episode 5 of Kindred Spirits, season 3, and it's called Blood in the Water.
Oh, man.
Awesome.
Blood in the Water. That's an awesome title. What are some of the reactions you've seen?
Everything from, you know, oh my God, listen to that, or oh, I've been touched, to oh my God, I'm getting out of here.
Yeah, yeah. That's why I asked, because I could see somebody like just being like, ah, and like running out of here.
Yeah, we we're on the Haunted Spring, and we've gone in and we go lights out where everybody turns off their flashlight or their headlamp and everything, let your eyes get totally adjusted to, you know, the darkness and everything, and then we'll start asking questions and everything. And this gentleman was standing next to me with his fiance, and he was kind of skeptical and everything, and then, like, oh my God, something touched me, and he's taking off down the trail, leaving his fiance and everybody else behind, like it's every man, woman, and child for himself.
Yeah,
you know?
At that point, that's all it is, right?
While I'm on that, if you guys don't mind, can I just say one thing to the guys out there?
Throw it out there.
The difference between a ghost hunter and a paranormal investigator is we do it professionally and everything. If you go out anywhere, please don't slip in, trespass, anything like that. When we go in,
that's a good call.
We go through and we talk to the landowner, the property owner, you know, and get these permissions to go in. Same thing with, like, talking about the park. You know, we went through the park rangers in the state and everything else, mm-hmm. and you know, you have to get permits and everything to be in areas after dark because it's illegal. And
so,
everything.
What are some of your one of your top couple of your top places you've ever been to?
Been to the state park, been to Brushy Mountain Penitentiary, where I actually got scratched.
Oh wow!
At Brushy Mountain and the Dead Children's Playground. That's another good one. That's in Huntsville.
Oh man, I used to live in Huntsville.
Dead Children's Playground.
That sounds very scary.
The oldest cemetery in Huntsville, right behind it is a park, and it's kind of like a rock bluff wall that sits down in a valley, and they have children's playground equipment there. It's actually a city park, and right above it on the hill is some like 1800s barrels of children and stuff there, and so between midnight and like 4 a.m., you'll hear children laughing and giggling, and the seesaws will start
Wow.
Moving, the swings will start moving, and there's actually no wind or anything there to, you know, to cause it.
Wow. Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Okay, that qualifies.
Yeah, I'd say that's pretty haunted and scary. Yeah. Were you ever worried about a spirit harming you or any member of your team when you've been out on an investigation?
So far, most of the ones that we have encountered have all been nice, nothing, you know, harming or anything else. Mm-hmm. I did say at Brushy Mountain, you know, that, you know, I was scratched and everything, but
right.
But you expect something like that there because, you know, when you're going to places like Henry Horton or these other places and everything, like the Dead Children's Playground, places like that, the Walking Horse Inn, you know, we've done the Lynchburg Funeral Home, a couple places like that. Mm. And you get, you know, just people in normal day, everyday life. But when you get into something like a penitentiary or a mental asylum or something like that, it's a whole different world. I told you, we treat them with respect and everything else. When you go into a penitentiary, if you treat them with respect and just kind of, you know, oh, can you do this or will you do that or can you answer this, they're going to prey on you because, you know, they prey on each other in there. That's the worst of society. So
right.
You got to kind of be authoritative and
I got you.
There.
Okay. So it's just location-based.
Oh, absolutely.
For sure. Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Yes, sir.
TennesseeParanormal.net. Check that out. Thanks, Rick, for being on this. Thanks, Ronnie. And thank all you listeners out there. I'm having so much fun doing this, and I hope you guys are learning a little bit too. So be sure to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, at O Nation Podcast. You get to see a little bit behind the scenes. You get to see what's coming up next. And I want to try something I've never done before. I want you guys to tweet at me, hashtag #ONationQuestions or hashtag #ONationPodcast. Tell me which questions you like the most. And also tell me if there's any occupations you want me to try to get for you. Also, wherever you're listening, be sure to subscribe and review. This really helps us out and helps me understand what's going on and if you guys are liking it or not. So thanks again for listening. And maybe, just maybe, paranormal investigator is a job that you've been looking for. Thanks, and we'll see you on the next one.